Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Credit Bank of Moscow full year 2015 financial and business results conference. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Sergei Lukyanov. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Alex. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Sergei Lukyanov. I'm Head of Investor Relations for Credit Bank of Moscow. I'm happy to present our speakers on today's webcast and conference call on Credit Bank of Moscow 2015 financial and business results. Here with me are Vladimir Shchuber, Chief Executive Officer of the bank, and Eric Dobosharam, Senior Vice President. Vladimir Shchuber will open today's call with a brief outline of landmark events of 2015 and recent trends in the corporate and retail business of the bank. Afterwards, Eric Dobosharam will proceed with a detailed analysis of financial results. All your questions and comments are welcome after the presentation when we open the Q&A session. Now, I would like to turn the floor over to Vladimir.
Thank you, Sergei. Dear ladies and gentlemen, let's start with a brief introduction of the bank's results. On the slide number four, in 2015, the bank showed good financial results, delivering acceptable incomes and high operation efficiency. The net income amounted to 1.5 billion Russian rubles, which is lower than in the previous years, but still a good performance on the backdrop of worsened macro environment and significant increase of loan impairment provisions. The net interest margin shrank in comparison with the 2014 at 3.9% level. At the same time, it demonstrated an increasing trend in the last quarter of 2015. The cost-to-income ratio historically distinguished Credit Bank of Moscow from the peer group, and in 2015, the bank showed a record low level of 26.4%. Last year was a very fruitful year for Credit Bank of Moscow, with a number of notable transactions in different areas of business. Going public on the Moscow Exchange is the most important event in the course of the year and a milestone step forward for the bank. Within two transactions closed in June and in December, additionally issued shares of the bank were acquired by new shareholders, mainly represented by Russian financial and insurance companies. As a result, equity stakes owned by original shareholders, including concerned Rosatom, controlled by Roman Avdeyev, and international financial institutions such as IFC and EBRD, were diluted from 100%-67% in total. The new shareholders currently own 34% of the capital of the bank, and the free float, according to the Moscow Exchange, constitutes 16% of the bank's share capital. Along with that, the bank strengthened its market presence in the cash handling business with the acquisition of Inkahran from Rosbank. The deal allowed Credit Bank of Moscow to reinforce its leading position on this market, as well as gave an access to new corporate customers. Let's now move to slide number five on corporate business. Corporate banking business was a key driver for the bank's development in 2015 and will remain a key activity for further growth in 2016. The loan and deposit portfolios grew disproportionately in 2015 due to a significant inflow of funds from corporate customers in the second half of 2015 on one side, and a selective growth of loan portfolio with a focus on quality of borrowers on the other side. The corporate loan portfolio growth of 92% since year-end 2014 was based on enlarged credit facilities to existing high-quality customers of the bank, as well as new lending to Tier 1 names from different sectors of economy. The bank managed to maintain a good diversification by industries, which is another valuable advantage from a risk management perspective. The main priority for the bank is and will remain a high-quality growth on the corporate segment. Let's now move to the retail banking business overview on slide number six. Due to more drastic lending standards and the drop of demand in the retail lending, the retail loan portfolio decreased by 7% on a year-on-year basis. At the same time, one of our target segments, mortgage lending, showed a 10% increase during the year, increasing its share in the gross loan book up to 18%. Meanwhile, the bank continued to steadily expand its customer base. The deposit portfolio grew by 23% in last year. Retail banking business key priorities are to establish an efficient branch network in Moscow and Moscow region, together with further development of alternative channels of distribution. Now I suggest moving further. Eric will provide details on the bank's financial results. Eric, please.
Thank you, Vladimir, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to draw your attention on the slide number 8 and start with a brief overview of income and expenses dynamics. Operating income rose by 39% on year-to-year to 39.2 billion rubles, enhanced by the growth of all its components, net interest income, fee and commission income, and other income. The net interest income increased by 13%, that was mostly driven by the interest income on securities portfolio and repo deals. Net fee and commission income moved up by 5%, mostly due to cash handling and other cash operation growth, while income from insurance contracts downturned, resulting from slowdown in the new retail loans origination. The other income growth was mainly due to foreign exchange gains and positive revaluation of securities portfolio. The operating expenses increased overall by 17%. The growth was only of 2% on salaries and administrative expenses, which demonstrate a very efficient cost management. The growth of the item other expenses came from the creation of additional provisions on credit guarantees. The cost-to-income ratio steadily improved, reaching a 26.4 low record level for the year 2015. The net interest margin was reduced to 3.9% in 2015. Now I suggest to turn to the slide number 9 and review the bank's asset structure. In the reporting period, the bank managed to roughly double its asset size up to 1.2 trillion rubles, becoming the 11th largest bank in Russia by the size of assets. Turbulent markets and macroeconomic uncertainty restrained the bank's risk appetite and resulted in the increase of the share of lower risk assets, such as liquid bonds and euro bonds with high credit ratings and interbank assets, mainly consisting on reverse repo, backed by highly liquid securities included in the central bank's Lombard list. Net corporate loans almost doubled, reaching 482 billion rubles. The growth was driven by increased lending volumes to existing customers and loans to high-quality new corporates from different sectors. Net retail loan dropped by 8% to 111 billion rubles, which was the result of the bank's strategy to mitigate the risk on the retail lending activities, as well as shrink of loan demand on the market. Now let's turn to slide number 10, which provides key loan portfolio metrics. In 2015, NPL grew up to 32 billion rubles, mostly driven by the corporate sector, while retail NPL remained almost flat through the reporting period. The bank faced a sharp increase of NPL starting from the second quarter of 2015 due to several significant corporate exposures. The NPL coverage by provisions was maintained at a market standard level of 114% as at the end of 2015. The cost of risk moved up from 3.3% at the end of 2014 to 5.4% at the end of 2015, reflecting the worsening of asset quality on the market. Worth being mentioned here that the level of write-offs was stable and still accounting for 1% of the gross loan portfolio in the reporting period. More details on the loan portfolio quality are provided on slide number 11. The corporate loan portfolio doubled during the year 2015, reaching a level of 510 billion rubles. In parallel, the NPL ratio increased from 0.4 to 4.5%, which was explained by deterioration of financial standing of a few large borrowers due to complex macroeconomic situation. The cost of risk increased as well on the corporate side from 2% to 5.8%, and the NPL coverage ratio was maintained at a level of 121%. The bank's retail gross loan book shrunk by 7% to 120 billion rubles as a result of a complex macroeconomic situation and more strict loan scoring rules applied to customers. NPL ratio increased from 6.3% to 7.9%, while NPL coverage ratio remained constant at 96%. Almost half of growth in retail NPLs came from mortgage loans, which are fully covered by collateral, with a loan-to-value of 43% at the end of 2015. Moving on to the next slide, number 12, I suggest to focus on the funding structure. The bank's funding base structure changed significantly in 2015 due to the inflow of corporate deposits during the second half of 2015. Corporate deposits increased four times, up to 698 billion rubles. Retail deposits grew up by 23% to 201 billion rubles. The share of customer deposits went up to 81% in total liabilities at the end of 2015. Attractive deposits from corporate customers were mostly denominated in US dollars. The debt repayment schedule is comfortable for the bank, with a major portion of debt maturing in 2018. Now we come to the final slide, number 13, which describes the bank's capital position. The IPO and SPO realized on the Moscow Stock Exchange in 2015, with a raise of 30 billion rubles new capital, were the main driver for the increase of Tier 1 capital. Tier 2 capital increased significantly as a result of two milestone deals. The first one was a 20.2 billion ruble subordinated loan received from the Deposit Insurance Agency in June in the form of OCZ. Besides this, the bank attracted a subordinated loan from one of its corporate customers totaling $300 million in December 2015. The bank maintained one of the highest capital adequacy ratio among peers, with IFRS total capital adequacy ratio of 16.5%. Russian accounting standards ratio, as of the 1st of March 2016, comprised N10 of 14.7% and N11 and N12 ratio at 7.7%. These were the main highlights of the bank's financial and business results for the year 2015. Thank you very much for your attention. Now, let's proceed to the Q&A session.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. And we have an opening question from Yulia DiMambro of Barclays. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, thank you very much for the presentation. I have three questions, please. One on asset quality, one on capital, and one on liquidity. On asset quality, my question is on the current trend in asset quality. What are you seeing at the moment, and what are your expectations for cost of risk for 2016? You have a fairly high exposure to the construction and property rental sectors. Are you concerned about these sectors at all, and what proportion of the lending is in dollars rather than rubles in that segment? That's my first question.
Okay, thank you very much. So we'll start one by one. In terms of our, let's say, feelings about currently what we see now in the loan book and what trends we see, I can tell you that the last news about the retail segment, just yesterday we discussed this internally with my deputy who is responsible responsible for it. So he said that maybe we see now kind of a bottom in terms of the NPLs and in terms of the problem loans generation from old portfolio in the retail segment. Maybe it's just the feelings, maybe it's really bottom. We will see, I think, in maybe 2-3-4 months. But it's more good news than bad news. In terms of the corporate business, just one by one. First of all, about the construction. So we have, of course, these loans. I can tell you that the majority of these loans are in a good shape, so the quality of these loans are good. Some of them of, we have in US dollars, but the majority in Russian rubles. So mostly all this exposure we have in Moscow and Moscow region, so in more wealth region than other part of Russia. Mostly it's residential construction, so there is more demand from final consumers still in the Moscow region for such loans and for such construction, so people still buying apartments less. And the majority, the big majority of it, we have in economy class lending. So there is no elite or business construction. Other part of the portfolio, except construction and development, and except the loans we have already in NPLs, we see that we are not waiting for some big surprises this year. So we hope that it will be like this. The biggest case last year in terms of the NPLs and provisions was Transera, as you know. It was a very public story in August, September, October last year. I can tell you that we already made 100% level of provisions on this loan. So in 2016, we are not expecting some extra provisions from Transera. I think I answered your question.
Yep, that's great. Thank you very much. My second question is on capital. So you saw very strong asset growth in 2015, which meant that even though you raised capital in the market, it didn't quite offset the increase in assets, so your capital ratios did trend down. What are your growth ambitions for 2016, and where do you expect your capital ratios to end the year? Do you expect them to be at a broadly similar level or lower than where they currently are?
First of all, the currently management is very comfortable with the levels of capital adequacy ratios we have now. But at the same time, I think you know that shareholders, they like to see more usage of the capital. Of course, we can still have some assets increase without some extra pressure to the capital and to the ratios. I think that you can see some potential decrease of the ratios of the capital adequacy ratios till the end of the current year. We expect that we will still grow a bit faster than the market. The market we expect this year will be about 15%. This is our internal expectations. We like to be a bit faster. Of course, as we said in the presentation just some minutes ago, we like to see the growth on like on the more on the quality side. So the risk management is the key still. And but of course, I think that the same jump as we did last year, you will not see this year because the base is much higher. So I think once again doubling the assets is not is not our target for this year. At the same time, I can tell you that some part of the assets last year, so the some part of the increase in the assets last year was without the pressure on the capital because we have like some repo transactions with a very good Russian bonds without pressure on the capital. So I think something like this.
Great, thank you very much. And my final question is on liquidity. So as you've already mentioned in the presentation, your deposit growth exceeded loan growth quite significantly again in Q4, and your loan-to-deposit ratio is now actually sub 80%. And I can see from your balance sheet that some of that was used to repay CBR funding and reduce interbank funding. But what are your plans for this excess liquidity going forward? And in particular, do you have any plans to buy back any of your euro bonds, and in particular the Tier 2 bonds, which are still trading below par?
Mm-hmm. Currently, we don't have a decision like this. Actually, very, very popular questions. People ask me normally these questions, the questions like this. So so Tier 1 and so Tier 2 or senior, we don't have a plans to make a buyback. And the reason is very simple. It's still the capital, and the capital is the key for the development of the bank. And the price maybe is good, so maybe it's a good time to make a buyback, but all the profit we can have after this buyback just is not the same as the business we can grow, we can develop using this capital. It's very simple. So for us, it's not the key to make kind of the buyback.
Great. So you will just use your excess liquidity to grow your lending book in that case?
Yeah. Yeah. But actually, you know that now the currently the liquidity position of the bank is quite balanced. So we have some extra liquidity, but it's more the cushion than just the liquidity we like to use for some extra fast increasing of the business. But at the same time, I can tell you that, yeah, absolutely right. We repaid all the CBR, almost all the CBR funding. So we still can use this source of funds if we need it, actually. So me personally, I'm quite comfortable currently with the liquidity position of the bank, and with some alternative channels we can use for take some extra liquidity from the market or from CBR, from the customers.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Olga Vasilova of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. My first question is about your subordinated debt in dollars. Could you tell us the price of this sub-debt?
This sub-debt was taken from our customers, so we cannot disclose this price, so we even didn't do this in our IFRS, so it's kind of part of the client relations. But the price is quite reasonable, I can tell you, so I like it.
Okay. My other question is your capital, which you received from the Deposit Insurance Agency in format of OFZ. From the top of my head, there was a condition that once banks receive this capital from the Deposit Insurance Agency, they need to grow loan portfolio by something like 1% per month in selected industries. So which industries are these for you, and are you growing these portfolios by this amount every month?
So we are in line with all the requirements of DIA. We even grow faster than they are asking to do it. So I see absolutely no problems in doing what DIA is asking to do and just be in line with all the obligations we take on the bank. In terms of the DIA requirements, they made, as far as I remember, they made some changes, and if before we need to grow just 1% every month, now it just should be 1% from the very beginning, so every month, but from the very beginning of the program, accumulative growth, you know. So which is a bit easier for the banks because you can just not think about every month did you make this growth like 1% one month to another month, but just be sure that you are growing accumulative growth of 1% every month.
Ah, so in other words, in 12 months from the beginning, you need to have 12% higher.
12%, yes. But okay. And you can make this 12% every month. So every month 1% growth. But you can make, for example, 1 month 2% growth, and next month you can just make 0% growth.
Mm-hmm. That's clear. One of the issues I have here is that other companies, including the biggest bank, are telling us that there is a lack of high quality demand at the market. So if you do not see constraints for growth, where do you find demand? Where do you find high quality demand for your loans? It's more a qualitative type of question than quantitative. If you could comment on that.
Yeah, of course. Yes. I've heard these concerns from the big guys. But at the same time, I can tell you, they are big guys. They have big balance sheets and they have big limit to one borrower. So that's why we are feeling ourselves much comfortable because we are not looking and we are not seeking for the loans and for the limits like 100 billion rubles, hundreds of billions rubles. We're just thinking of less amounts and less exposures. That's why for us it's first of all much easier. But in a general, I can say that I agree with this concern about borrowers in whom we can be sure that they will repay the loan for sure. So all the time there is concerns, there is discussion, there is a strong position of the risk management, and it's not so obvious like maybe two, three years ago that this borrower is good, this borrower is bad. There is more gray tones now, and the level of analysis, I can tell you honestly, is much, much higher and much more deep than it was 2 years ago. We are even using some, we are trying to use some extra information about the borrowers. We are trying to gain this, we are trying to take this information from different sources, et cetera, et cetera. And also I can tell you that level of cooperation between the banks, of course mostly between the private banks, is higher than it was maybe two, three years ago, because we see that we are working with the same customers, and sometimes the customers used this fact that private banks were more competitors, big competitors, than like partners or just friends. And now I can tell you it was changed. We are really making the exchange of the information.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's useful. My last question would be about consumer lending segment. I realize that now it's not a priority for you anymore, but maybe you can tell us what approval ratios you do have now, because you still provide loans in the segment. And also, when do you think the seasoning of old portfolios will be over? In other words, what's average maturity of your consumer loans now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if I understand your question, the first part of your question clear, that you mean the approval rate from all the incoming level applications. How much?
In fact, on the main acquisition channel that we have, at the less risky population, so which are employees of corporate customers and existing customers of the bank, we have an approval rate which is close to 50%, between 40 and 50%. Then on the most risky population, which are, let's say, the size street customers, we drastically reduce the approval rate, of course, on those people, and now it's closer to 10%.
Mm-hmm. So 10% for people from the street.
Exactly. So we come to the office and apply for a credit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And...
Yeah.
maturity of your consumer loans and if you think seasoning of old portfolio is over or not yet?
As I said, just there was one of the first questions about this. So just yesterday, Alexey Kosyukov told me that maybe we can see something like almost seasoning of this old portfolio. Of course, it's a good fact, and maybe it's a good gut feeling to that we feel it and we see it, but I don't like to be so optimistic in this way. So we hope it can be just like maybe summer of this year. And we also hope that the portfolio we started to originate from, for example, the beginning of last year will be in with a much better quality than the old portfolio. But it's all the time like this. You all the time is hoping that the new portfolio will be better and something is happening in the country or in some in economy, et cetera, et cetera. And once again, you see some issues, some problems, but it's a life.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
As a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Elena Kolchina of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Good afternoon. I have a question about your corporate deposits. You received a number of large corporate deposits last year. So my question is, what is the weight of the largest depositor to total deposits, and also what is the term of these deposits, and do you think that they are sustainable? Because I am worried that if this money are taken, so how this funding will be replaced?
Okay, that's one by one. So first of all, in terms of the weight of the biggest deposit, one colleague can help me. It was, yeah. So I think it's about 15%, maybe 20%. If I'm saying about the biggest deposit, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
Just maybe we can just now start to answer another questions about the tenors, terms, and how they're sustainable, and the colleagues just now will give me the figure. So first of all, about tenors, absolutely different tenors. There is a... we have a lot of deposits. You just, if you're asking just about some the biggest deposits or just all the deposits, because we have overnight deposits, we have deposits for 2 years, 5 years, we have 1 year, 3 months. It's absolutely different. But average is close to 9 months currently. We are comfortable in terms of the liquidity position, as I said just some minutes ago. So we can, even if there will be some outgoing of these deposits from the bank, we can absolutely, without any problems, repay them using some personal shoulder of the CBR and just maybe taking some money from the market, etc., etc. The majority of the deposits are without the calling possibility, so they can be they cannot be taken from the bank before the tenor, before the contractual date. But I absolutely agree with the concerns I've heard from number of investors and number of analysts about the big growth of the deposits and about the some concentration we have from number of the big depositors. We absolutely understand all these risks. We are monitoring them, we are working with them, and as I said, just the key here is the liquidity position of the bank and not trying to play some games with the market using these deposits. So coming back to your first question, we have top five depositors. They have about 50% now currently.
50.
Yeah, okay. It's a top five depositor.
Quite large concentration, really.
Yes, agree, but this is the top companies with a good risk position of the bank on the bank. So they open mm-hmm. limits. They started to work with the bank. There is a number of the reasons why As I said previously, seems to be my last call, there is one of the reasons is that we are good bank, big bank with good ratings. Actually, we are number two by the ratings by international rating agencies among the private banks. Just yesterday there was some news flow that the government want to make some limitation of the banks who can have an approval to take deposits from government companies. So we are among this list of the banks, etc., etc. So, and we are not sanctioned bank, which is also one very important thing.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Greg Palfi of Power Assets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks for the presentation. Two questions. Can you just repeat how much would have been the provisions in the fourth quarter if you take out this one-off Transareo related provision? And second question is kind of a smaller one, just on the admin. According to my calculation, it's 1.8 billion ruble from the 900 in the previous two quarters. Can you just explain what happened in the fourth quarter for that cost item to double? Thanks.
So Transareo was about half in the last quarter of all the provisions we made. And the second question I didn't understand, to be honest.
Yeah, it's the admin line. Just wondering, I think it was 1.8 billion ruble.
So you mean administrative expenses?
Exactly. And I'm just wondering what was the cause of that? Is it just acquiring of the banking?
Yeah, it's Inkahran. The only reason it's Inkahran because we started to consolidate the Inkahran. And of course, it's very expensive business in terms of the costs. And that's why there was a big increase.
Okay. And what was the price to book value you paid for this bank from Rosbank?
It's also kind of information we cannot disclose because of our contract with Rosbank.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just regarding 2016, how do you see, provisions? Would they kind of be normal, like go back to normal levels? I mean, even lower levels in second, third quarter.
The problem is that there is a very high level of uncertainty still in Russian economy and Russian banking system. We like to be conservative. That's why the majority of operational profit we, send to the provisions in our budget. But of course, it's a more conservative approach than we see now currently after almost first quarter was will end in a couple of days. So we hope that we can show the better results than in the last year, but everything of course will depend on the provision level. There is a number of the borrowers we more likely will we like to increase the provisions on these guys, but we are monitoring them. We are trying to just increase our borrowers. We are trying to increase our position in terms of the collateral. In some borrowers, we are trying to sell collateral, etc., etc. So just something like this. I think the majority of the operational income will come to the provisions, or the operational profit mm-hmm. will come to the provisions.
Okay. And just going back to the growth, given the roughly 0 or -1% GDP growth in Russia, how do you manage to get that growth in the loan book that will, not go sour? Can you just repeat that? Because I couldn't hear.
First of all, what you are thinking here? So first of all, we have an inflation. official inflation and real inflation, et cetera, et cetera. So let's say 10-15%. So with this number, the banking system should just be increased naturally. This is number one. Number two, in terms of our current competitive position, we are still feel ourselves as a not very big bank, so we still feel that we can be competitive. We can just, let's say, fight with other banks for the good borrowers using different opportunities for it. So as the price competition as the number one opportunity, second, decision-making process opportunity and other. So we think that still increase the market share for us is still manageable. We are not top three bank in Russia when if they're talking about the market share, just like just something which is not very easy.
Okay.
For us, we still see this room for development in this way. So in terms of the market share, and of course, as I said in the very beginning of my speech, now it's also in a level of inflation in Russia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes on the line of Nick Dimitrov of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. I have a couple of questions, and the first one is with regard to net interest margin, whether we're going to see a continuation of the normalization of net interest margin in 2016, if you can provide some guidance, and also cost of risk and NPLs. I understand that the operating environment continues to be very volatile and challenging, but nonetheless, when you guys budget things on your side, like what kind of numbers do you use? So that's going to be my first question.
So in terms of the net interest margin, we once again hope that it can be more than 4%, but all the time its key question is the risk management, is a risk profile of the customers. We can even make 5%, but after this we'll start to fight with the borrowers to take our money back. So a conservative approach is showing us that something like 3.5, 3.8, 3.9, maybe up to 4% is manageable. But at the same time, these levels of net interest margin for us are much comfortable because we can predict cost of risk a bit better. But at the same time, I can tell you that last quarter of last year was 3.9, if I'm right. Yeah. So why not? Maybe we'll see something like 4 plus in the very beginning of this year in the first quarter, because we still have on the deposit base some deposits with the rates which are higher than the current market rates, and so they will be replaced by the less expensive deposits. And I didn't understand the second part of your question.
I'm sorry, yeah. If you can give us some color in terms of cost of risk for 2016. Ah. It's related to another question that was asked earlier.
Yeah. So you know, I can tell you some the figures, but they are not like from the budget. Maybe something like from my mind. So we try to make something like up to 3.5% on the corporate side and 6.5, maybe 7% on the retail side. I think that currently it's more like something like real this year, but at the same time, to be honest, I see now some loans which more provision than we than what we see now, like current situation with the borrowers. I mean the loans from the last year when we made some high provisions level, and maybe we will try to find a way to decrease the provisions this year with these borrowers.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I got the numbers correctly. You said 3.5 for corporate,
and then
6.5 or 7% for retail.
Yep.
Okay. And another question. I was trying to figure out the logic for taking those $300 million subordinated loan from one of your clients. When I look at your total capital, it does look fairly decent. However, the quality, though, is not the best, right? Because 50% of it is comprised of subordinated capital rather than, and the rest is core equity. usually that mix is more in favor of core equity. So how do you guys think about capital going forward?
So we don't have any plans currently both for Tier 1 and Tier 2 capital, except just the profit, we hope, the profit which will be this year. So my expectation that it will be enough for the growth. I absolutely agree with you that the current structure of the capital is not the best, but at the same time, I can tell you honestly that the Tier 2 capital we took from the clients, from the market, from DIA last year has quite a good price in terms of the pricing. But just currently, I just can repeat, we don't have any plans to do it. But if there will be some good offers on the market, some good windows like it was last year, why not? But my personal feelings now that more likely we don't see any activity in Tier 1 capital within the next 6, 7, 9 months.
Okay, got it. And my last question is going to be on restructured or renegotiated loans. Can you provide some color what they are as a percentage of total loans? And what,
give me a second.
What industries are the drivers of those renegotiated loans?
Now it's about 2%.
2%, kind of okay.
Yeah, yeah, we have the figure, but in terms of the industries, we just need to see. I have your email. I think I can just send you this.
Okay. Sounds good. And can I ask one more question? Sorry. So you guys doubled the balance sheet year over year with no acquisitions, right? Although there were a lot of rumors that you might engage in some fashion with Ural Sib and stuff like that. Is the M&A issue off the table, or you're kind of still looking at the market? I'm just trying to put things in perspective considering, you know, where your capital ratios are.
Yeah, yeah. Look, the people who met me just before, I think you also, we met with you some 2 or 3 times, so you know that I'm not a big fan of not organic growth of the bank, because together with the bank and the assets and the clients, you can just also buy the kind of some problems of this company, or I mean the bank. So personally, it's all the time the big issue for the people who is trying to sell something to me, like that it's a good idea. Actually, the bankers come in quite regularly just in trying to sell something in Russia. But it's all the time, my first answer is no, no, and no, but after this, they're trying to find some ways why it can be yes. But, you know, currently also we are not thinking about any assets in Russia we can buy. There was Inkahran, and I was a big fan of this transaction, I think, and maybe I told about this also to you and to other investors 2-3 years ago. So we did it, and I can tell you honestly that it was a good transaction, and we are now working with it, with this new asset. But in terms of the banks, I think more no than yes. But at the same time, as we are saying to all the people, we are more, we like to see the opportunities. If there is an opportunity and the price is reasonable and the asset is predictable for us, why not? Why not?
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
As we have no further questions, I'd like to turn the call back to the speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Dear colleagues, thank you very much for your call. Hope this year will be more positive for us and for Russian banking system as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.